Yes, indeed. A wonderful start there. Courtesy Ben Webster, the king, I think, of the tenor sax, with Blue Light. This was recorded in Copenhagen in September of 1965, a year after Webster moved there to live. He's joined on this particular tune by Arnvedt Meyer on trumpet, John Darville on trombone, Ole Kongsted on tenor sax, Niels Jørgen Steen on piano, Hendrik Hartmann on bass, and Hans Niemann on drums. Ben Webster was born in Kansas City, Missouri, and things took a turn for him because the thrust of jazz had shifted, and for some reason he just was not prominently featured anymore, and found a home in Europe, specifically in Amsterdam and in Copenhagen, and went there to live and did very well. This was a wonderful recording, and it's rare. He died of a cerebral hemorrhage in Amsterdam after a performance in 1973. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and although I was given a preliminary assignment to bring you up to date on where I am health-wise, I thought that was going to be tomorrow for me, a very special day, and we'll get to that tomorrow. But I'll tell you where I am and how things are going tomorrow. It is my official birthday. So I don't want to preempt myself. We'll do it as a birthday kind of thing tomorrow. But today, we're on the cusp of the 2016 preliminaries coming to a close with a series of primaries scheduled for this month of June and leading into the craziness, further craziness, of the month of July, when the duopoly, the Republican and Democratic parties, will be holding their respective conventions in that month of July. The Democrats will be meeting in Pennsylvania at the Wells Fargo. Listen to the names of the places they're meeting. The Wells Fargo Center from July the 25th to the 28th in Philadelphia. The Republicans at the Quicken Loans Arena in Cleveland, Ohio from July the 18th to the 21st. Now, what would concern us in this program today, as you know, from time to time, we take a poll on our changing or changed or perhaps non-changing attitudes about this political horse race, and whether it will shape our political actions, our political choices in this presidential season. So we take our customary poll, especially since we have 9 more primaries to go. On June the 4th, in the Virgin Islands, and June the 5th in Puerto Rico, on June the 7th in California, Montana, New Jersey, New Mexico, South Dakota, North Dakota, and a scathing indictment of this whole thing called the democracy, a primary in the District of Columbia, which has no real representation in Congress, but the primary process is going to be important for some reason. And on June the 14th, that's the last one, District of Columbia scheduled. So in the 9 primaries that are done at the end of, by the mid-month in June, with that, we will know definitively, as they head into their various conventions, we'll know where things stand in terms of the big parties, the duopoly. The leading candidate, of course, for the Democrats is Hillary Clinton, who, by all accounts, has already locked up enough delegates and superdelegate support to clinch the nomination there. And, of course, we have no competitors for Donald Trump. He is the lone man on the Republican plane. It is understood he will win that nomination, barring some major development and a lot of friction and turmoil in the Republican ranks that would force delegates within the Republican Party to reconsider their position and throw their support behind somebody else. That scenario is not likely, at least from what you see as the reports these days. It seems as if, even though there's great resentment toward Donald Trump, they nonetheless have to get used to it, that he is going to be the man for the Republican, as a Republican standard bearer. Interestingly, the guy who was credited with being one of the smartest people in the world, theoretical physicist Stephen Hawking, says he can't. It baffles him. He could solve the issue of how the world was created, and he can wax philosophic about all kinds of things based on his understanding of physics. But he can't quite bring his mind to understand Donald Trump, the rise of Donald Trump. It baffles him, he says. And I wonder why. I mean, you're an Englishman. How could coming out of a very, very striated society, how could Donald Trump possibly be so complex to you that you don't get it, you can't understand it? When Donald Trump, in my view, is just so very, very emblematic of colonial Britain and the mindset of colonial Britain. I mean, if you understand that, you should be able to understand Donald Trump quite well, quite easily. But he seems to have a problem. It's big news. Stephen Hawking is very, very baffled by Donald Trump. And I'm very baffled by the fact that Stephen Hawking is very baffled about Donald Trump. And today, another baffling move, but not really, if you understand how politics works. The very liberal governor of California, who, as I said, is the state is going to have its primary, its much-anticipated primary on June the 7th. A week ahead of that primary, Jerry Brown has endorsed, guess who? Yes, indeed. The wife of the guy he tried to best in 1992, that's Bill Clinton, and got into a pretty nasty fight with Bill Clinton. But, you know, what a difference a couple of decades make when you can see the light. And even though you had big trouble with Bill Clinton and his ethical lapses and his ideological differences, you could come to see the light in just 2 decades, 24 years, whatever. And you can see the light, and you can see Hillary Clinton, who might be indicted any day now, as the logical choice for the Democratic Party. And you are a progressive, liberal governor of a very liberal state. See how things work? Very interesting. So we'll be talking about these things. We'll be talking about what you see as the political reality we're experiencing. Where does that put you in your view? What choices do you see that you have? How do you analyze a situation? And more so, with regard to any move outside of the duopoly, outside of the Republicans and the Democrats, what do you see as a workable alternative? What are you inclined to do after all this tra-la-la is over and the primaries have come to a close by mid-June and they head into their much vaunted media coverage conventions, and everybody will have an opinion one way or the other, and that opinion is going to cause them, for the most part, to decide that the choice is between the Democrats and the Republicans, the way it always has been. And whether you like Hillary or you don't like Hillary. About a week ago, I was visiting with my brother and one of my brothers, and friends were visiting, and they all were talking about the race. And of course, you know, I was just listening in. And they were all, I mean, they were all pro-Hillary, very much Hillary Clinton. And they just were hoping against everything that she would win because she's such the right choice. And then, you know, as you listen a little closer to what it is they're saying, you realize they have absolutely no information at all about Hillary Clinton, and their entire decision-making has been shaped by what they think they know based on how the media have been covering Hillary Clinton and about emotional stuff that they invent themselves. They like Hillary. Well, what do you mean you like Hillary? You don't even know the woman. What do you like about Hillary Clinton? What do you know of her history? Of what particular significance is this woman to your survival, your own reality, and not just Hillary, any candidate for that matter. But they love themselves some Hillary. And then it dawns on you how potent a force the media really could be and are, how they shape opinions and make it look logical that you are engaging in illogical decision-making because they tell you what to think. And you believe that your decision is a good one, but it is standing on nothing. There's nothing there. There's nothing concrete that you know for a fact. And what you need to know is not being told. And so we take a look at that and we amplify it because it applies to all of the candidates in this current presidential cycle. And in any presidential cycle, for that matter. But this one is particularly interesting from the point of view of how the media have functioned voluntarily and in some cases induced by campaign dollars or the promise of campaign ads, revenue, how they in turn function as a negative force because they are indulging in wholesale misinformation, disinformation, non-information, and it's an industry. And they're compromised. And there are very few media outlets that are actually engaging in journalism. The media people have taken on the role of advisor. I've seen articles where people say, well, this is what Hillary needs to do to win. Since when is that your job, to advise people in public and make it look like journalism? This is what she needs to do. She knows what she needs to do to win. And one of the things that she needs to do to win is to co-opt you as the media person. To co-opt your media outlet. And Donald Trump has done a masterful job. We talked about that from the very beginning. Done a masterful job of beating the media at its own game. He made them create him as a legitimate candidate. And they can't get out of it or won't get out of that role now. They're in it. And it's, again, money. The promise or the perceived promise of millions of dollars flowing into the various media outlets from Donald Trump's coffers induces them to voluntarily just make the whole media outlet available to him as part of a kind of extension of his public relations effort. And so, for many reasons, this presidential race is a bizarre exercise in that it combines all these things, the creation of false realities, the creation of character, for lack of a better term, that the image, the management of image, the management of what it is you end up thinking and believing, because as you think and believe, so will you do, your actions being shaped by what you think and what you think you believe. But those two functions are being expertly managed by a compliant and complicit press. It's an incredible study how we see the rise of extremely mediocre people who in the real world have no business at all in national leadership. They have no reason to be there. And they shouldn't be there. They are substandard in almost every way. We talked about the kakistocracy. Kakestos, the Greek word meaning really, really bad people, substandard people, the worst elements of a society emerging as your leaders. How is that done? So all of this we'll talk about as we open the phone lines at 888-874-4888. Let's hear you analyze things as they stand now. And what has changed, if anything, about your attitudes toward this political process and this time that we're in, whether your attitudes are the same, whether they have changed, and in what ways have they changed, and how will this likely affect your political action as a politically conscious person? All that and more right after this short break. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM, and we are testing ourselves. We are recalibrating, being on the cusp of the month of June, which brings us the close to the primary season, hopefully, by mid-month. And we have 9 primaries to go, and they're significant, especially some are being watched more closely than others. But we basically calibrating ourselves, trying to figure out, have we changed the way we are thinking about this, and in what ways have we changed, if at all? And how is that likely to inform your political choice, whatever that might be? 1-800-875-4888. And we start with Jay from New York. Hello, Jay.
Hello, Lucrece. How are you today?
Fine, thank you. Now, how are you? Where are you in the scheme of things?
Oh, I'm more tuned in now than ever in regards to Hillary Clinton is not the person for the job, nor is any other candidate. The thing that I'm most tuned in about is the fact that the media is not portraying the true nature of who Hillary Clinton is, and that most people don't have an idea on who she is or what she has done or how she's even gotten to this position other than by the media, in a sense, appointing her to the status of being the nominee. So what happens now is that we have to figure out what we're going to do if she does get into office and where we go forward as a people to maybe build another party or to just leave this form of politics alone and build something else or move in another direction. But
all right. Could I ask you to personalize what you've just said in that sense, that irrespective of who the Democratic nominee would be and the Republican nominee would be, you're pointing to the fact that the process is what troubles you. So having arrived at that conclusion, have you come up with any idea of what you think you would do politically? I mean, are you going to be part of this process again? Or are you going to opt out? Or what are you leaning toward?
I'm leaning towards more local politics. I think we need to start more grass movements in our community and maybe build up communities. I'll give you a perfect example. I'm looking more or less to try and educate the people and where I live at Harlem and how to maybe be able to stay within Harlem. And that's not going to happen with the basic behavior of the politicians. It's going to have to take a grass movement of groups of small individuals, honestly going from block to block, building to building, and it's going to be a long process. So no, I'm stepping out of national politics and looking more into just doing local grassroots work. And if we can at some point in time, maybe in the next 4 to 8 years, get someone in that could be a voice, I think that's the direction, because the system is totally corrupt. And I'll leave you with this. If Donald Trump becomes the president of the United States, the buffer for him and black people in this country will be Al Sharpton. Keep that on record.
That's a very daunting issue that you just raised there. But I want to thank you for getting us started today, Jay. Thanks so much for your call. We move next to Queens. Bruce is waiting to tell us what he thinks. Hello, Bruce.
Yes, good afternoon. And I'm praying for you for your speedy recovery. And
thank you.
Well, this is my observation. I'm looking at CNBC on TV because I periodically check in with them. And Donald Trump was just investigated about his fundings and his foundation, where the money come from that he raised for the veterans. And
right.
I'm thinking that he's trying to set this up to set up Hillary for a big debacle because of her, and because obviously he know about the foundation, the Bill Clinton, Hillary, Chelsea Foundation, and then he's going to launch that on her. He should if he don't, because once he do that, he open up a whole can of worms on her foundation. So he's been investigated about a foundation,
but I think coming up soon. Even if he does that, here's the reality, and I just want to bring it to your attention to find out what you think. Hillary's base, the place where she has found political validity and salvation, the constituencies that have legitimized her, they don't really matter very much to Donald Trump. And I'm talking about Latinos and African Americans particularly. Those are the people, those are the constituencies that have brought the Clintons as a couple into political being. Now,
yes,
it doesn't matter in a way what the move by Donald Trump, let's say, as you go, you are suggesting that he may use this thing about the foundation to raise questions about the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Foundation, which we've been talking about in the last week, and we will continue because there's some very serious developments there. We will continue to discuss that. But what I'm saying is, in recognition of the fact that you live in Queens, Hillary's protection has come, just as it had for Bill. It comes from black people. So Donald Trump is not looking for black people. His constituency is entirely different. Hillary is going to work like crazy to develop that vote as a predictable vote. Now, what do you think people in your community are likely to do? What do you think their attitude is likely to be if they have to make a choice between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton? Where do you think they're going?
Well, I'm going to tell you, I can't speak for the people, but I can speak for myself. I'm not voting for neither one of them. And if they're like the gentleman before me, if there's a grassroots, somebody that's a little bit smarter than me when it comes to this convoluted voting process and machinery can get up and explain to the people in layman terms of how we're going to surge forward with this, I'm with that, with the group of us. But on an individual basis, I don't know how people think, what they're going to do. I was shocked with the firewall of South Carolina. I was shocked with the people supporting in Harlem of Hillary and knowing what Bill did, knowing his history, or maybe they don't know. I'm just shocked. I'm reeling in shock and saying, what the, what, see that as a name? I'm just like, I don't
believe
it.
I'm sure you were going to say heck, right?
Yeah, you know, I didn't want to say what I wanted to say, but I'm just waiting for what the mass is going to do, the ones that's left of the masses that's left that want to make a conscious effort to overthrow this whole process. I agree with you. This whole process should be flushed off a cliff with weights on it, because it's just no good. It's just making democracy look like it look bad.
So the point I was trying to make, if I could just extend it a little bit, is that the people who are currently in leadership now in African-American Latino communities, they're solidly with the Democratic Party. So what will it take for this grassroots effort that you envision to actually take hold and start to produce something? And number two, do you think it would happen in time to basically have reasonably immediate effect? Or is this a long-term process?
What I think, what people have to do is, because I've been hearing this for years, we got you got to get them out. You voted them, you got to get them out. But that once they in, they like a tick on a dog's back. They in, or one of those Lyme disease ticks. They embedded. You got to get tweezers to take them out. That's the way the politicians are to me. And it's going to be a process, because we got into this over a process. We got to get out of it in the process and tell them this is what we don't like, and we have to get out pitchforks and bats with nails in it and tell them, look, if you don't do this, this is what's going to happen to you. And I would suggest that you don't run for politics unless you're going to do what the people say you're going to do. And no more shenanigans, because we have a whole history of you and this political machine, and you sit back, the ones that's in politics now, sit back and don't do nothing, don't say nothing. Come to the town hall meetings and tell us what we should do, and we're supposed to be the other way around. They're supposed to do what we ask them to do in the first place. When they go to Washington, go to these, run for these offices, they're supposed to give, deliver goods and services to the community. They're not doing it. We've been trying to get them out of office once they end. They maybe do one term, then they come back, and then somebody else go back there to play the same old game. And people are just getting sick and tired of it. I like to see it wither on the vine. That's the way I feel.
Okay, well, I get it. If you can, if I could push you a little bit, to give me a concrete example of how you would apply your thinking to political action, what would it look like?
Well, first of all, I had to get control of, like you have control of this radio station, but it's going to be a national level, to get the truth out to people. That's what I would do. I would have to have a TV station that would really... No, I don't need no commercials. Nobody's selling us nothing. Just tell us the raw facts, and just tell us the facts to get to the people, because people are starving. For the ones who can, who don't understand, who can understand information, to get that information out to people so people can make a rational decision. That's what I would do first, because without information and without the right information, accurate information, people are being fooled. And that's what I would do first. If that can answer your question.
You get the information out.
Yeah,
and
get
why
the
would that
out.
Why we would need, be why would that be your number one priority?
That would be my number one priority, because information is power. And that's what they're doing with they're controlling the people's mind with these false flags on regular TV. I can 2, 4, 5, 7, 11, all of these jive stations that just tell you fluff and buff and a ton of commercials, but they're not really getting to the core of the issues. And I look at Morning Joe, not to give them no big ups, but I look at a different way of political spin on things and know that even that's not right. People are just not getting the right information to make a rational decision on who and what and why and ways the government's supposed to be working. And until they have this information, they're just like spinning their wheels with bleach on those tires, just making smoke and not going nowhere.
Well, thank you so much, Bruce. An education in itself talking to you today. Thanks for calling.
You're quite welcome.
New York, Patricia, you are on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrice, and good afternoon to the PRN family.
Thank you so much for that. Good afternoon to you.
I'm just going to piggyback on something that Bruce is saying, because it's very interesting. I was speaking to my son just a few days ago about the election and what we plan to do. And, of course, he wanted to know what I was going to do because, of course, I've shared with you, he thinks that I'm special. And he keeps telling me about that small group of people that we talk amongst each other, but nobody else thinks the way we think. So, of course, he wanted to know what I'm going to do. And I was very clear. I said to him, I'm not voting for anybody at the top of the ticket, that I'm going to focus on local elections. And so he says, well, what do you mean? I says, I'm not voting for Hillary and I'm not voting for Donald. So he says, so that means that you're going to help Donald win. I said, I'm not going to help Donald win. I'm just not voting for either one. And I tried to explain to him that it really doesn't matter. Now, he doesn't feel very strongly about voting for Hillary. His position was that my grandson, my oldest grandson, who is a strapping young man, would become a target by the police should Donald Trump become president, because Trump's position would be, let the police do what they want. And I understand his fear. That's my grandson. I understand his fear. But what I tried to explain to him, that my grandson would not be any safer under Hillary Clinton. I mean, look at all of the people, all of the men, women, and children who have died while Obama was in office. So, of course, we agreed to disagree. He's going to vote for Hillary because he wants to protect his son, my grandson. I understand. But part of the problem that regular folks have with leadership, and even looking at the Democratic Party, because, you know, I said to him, the Democratic Party is more concerned, they are more loyal to Hillary than they are to winning this presidency, because if they were, they would go with the person who conceivably everybody is saying has a better chance of voting, of beating Trump. They don't even want to do that. So it's really important that people understand, people who profess to be leaders, people who the community have voted in, once they're voted in, we don't follow, we don't keep track of what they do. So we are so starved for black faces in high places. We are so starved that all we want to do is get black people in and pray and hope that they do the right thing. And as we know, they don't. So the first
So in this election cycle, what has emerged and continues to emerge for you as the object lesson here in politics?
Well, clearly neither party, absolutely neither one has our best interest at heart. And at some point we have to acknowledge that. I don't know what it will take. I do know that I have shared a lot of the information I have learned from you, and I shared a lot of information that I have read from, you know, from non-traditional sources. And I have, and that has helped people shape what they did, number one, in the primary here in New York, and what they plan to do in the general election in November. So information really is power. The problem is that most of us do not monitor what people do once they get in. And once they get in, their loyalty is to themselves. So they're going to do, their loyalty is to themselves, which means their loyalty is to the party. So
do you believe, Patricia, that there is potential in a viable and vibrant grassroots movement that could alter the course of politics, and that it could happen sometime soon? And what would it take for that to happen?
I absolutely do, because clearly people are disaffected with both parties. That's what Trump and Sanders have shown. So clearly that is. I don't think it'll occur in time for this election, but I do believe that there is a movement, a grassroots movement that is growing, that there is momentum. Unfortunately, it won't be in time for this election, but I bet you'll be there for the next election.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for your call today and your input. Great hearing from you. Let's go to New Jersey, where Eric awaits. Hello, Eric.
Hey, Utrice. Good to hear.
How you doing?
You're doing better. And
thank you.
All the best, as always.
Thank you.
I wanted
to
comment.
So, what are your thoughts today on the subject?
Sure. Yeah, I wanted to comment on what Bruce mentioned, and my question is, why does he think that he needs a TV or radio station when we already got it? I mean, everybody's got a cell phone, pretty much, almost everybody, even the poorest of the poor. And that cell phone has access to the internet. So what is stopping him from sharing the links, which we all have access to every single day after every single show, and just, you know, sending out, sharing a link with all the people that you meet, and then having a group discussion a few days later, you know, about what people are thinking after they hear that. And then spread that. Everybody does that a little bit. That's how the word gets around. We already have that.
I think his point was that while we may have isolated examples of that kind of media, PRN and other sources, there isn't a critical mass of such media just yet. And so I think he was making the point that we need to encourage more of these kinds of independent media to come into fruition. But your point is well taken. But what about the current situation that we're in? What does it do to your consciousness as a political person?
Exactly what I just mentioned. I mean, I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. I'm doing it every single day. And the more people do this, instead of just, you know, wish and hope, we need a radio station. We already have tons of them. We have InfoWars, we have PRN, we have so many independent investigators everywhere. And the only thing is missing is each and every one of us to share the links and then have group discussions with each other so that more eyes are open, more minds are filled with enlightening information. And then people wake up in an accelerated way instead of, you know, just sitting back and waiting for someone to do all the work.
I get it. Now, let me ask
you're
about
doing
your
all the work.
Own,
Gary
your
Noll
own
is doing
political.
All the work. You know, we already have people that are that we can chair and then open other people's eyes.
I want to ask you about what has emerged for you in this political season as the most important political lesson that you have learned personally about this process.
I was already aware of all this, so there's nothing really new that, you know, it's just a, you know, a repeat of what's been going on. I just love more truthful investigations such as the Danny Sheehan, you know, historical, unbelievable, you know, cover-ups. That those are the most important things that would open up people's minds that that we have access to share, in addition to all of the you know, and analysis that you and Gary and everybody else does. So that's the best.
Thank you so much, Eric, for your call and contribution today. I really appreciate it. Let's go to Philadelphia. Clara, you're on the air.
Hello, Nutrice. I hope you're well, and hello to everyone else. And
thank you so much.
I wanted to say that I think that the prospects for dramatic change anytime soon are relatively small because people react so slowly. Everything is out on the table now. I mean, you ask, what have the activities of this current season, electoral season, done for me? And it's everything has been opened up, and everything is very blatant, and people are doing things despite what the population might think. They're telling us, we don't care what you think. We're going to do what we do. So that, to me, confirms my thinking that we need to actually separate from the system and do what we need to do for ourselves. And I think doing it on a one-by-one basis is probably the most effective. I think leading by example is the only way. Talking to people doesn't get very far, but when people see you doing things, say, what did you do? How did you do that? And then you talk to one person, and they start. Then I've found that to be true. In the last few years, there have been so many people that have begun to change. Like I told someone something 2 years ago. Okay, it took them that long for their doctor to tell them. Then they listen more and they pay more attention. And when you pay attention to yourself and the well-being of yourself, then you extend out. As I said before, it goes from the personal to the family to the friend to the community. And that's my perspective.
I appreciate that, that you see it as a one-on-one process. Here's a dilemma, and I wanted to find out what you think about that. While this is happening, or while you envision this as a workable plan, there are certain things that require mass input and mass action. How do you encourage mass input and mass action to encourage further mass benefit and mass results?
You know, that's a question that I'm grappling with because, you know, I say you don't buy their food, you don't use their medical facilities. I mean, it takes a while. It takes a long time, and I don't know how, I must say, to do this on a mass basis, except that one person goes out, they talk to two people, and those two people affect another two people. That's why it's so slow. And if you want to go out and demonstrate, that's fine. But there's so much violence placed upon the demonstrators. I don't know that I feel good about encouraging people to go out and confront the police. I have signs. I give out cards. I'll go downtown and I'll stop, and for some reason or other, somebody starts talking to me. I'll give them a card. I tell them about PRN, and I'm hoping. I know some people will extend the message. I know that. Those are the ones that keep in touch with me, but I'm hoping that others do. And that's a question for other people to help me with. I really need help with.
Well, you gave us the answer. The answer is you're doing what you believe is well within your ability and capacity to do. And that's where you can make your contribution. So that is a perfectly fine response. You recognize that there may be limitations if the idea is mass movement, mass action, but your one-on-one is just as legitimate and perhaps even more so because it has long-term effect, because it literally can change people's orientation. And who knows if this the multiplier effect could end up causing mass change if it is that effective.
Well, thank you for that feedback, Yatrice. That's what I'm thinking. That's why I'm thinking it will take a longer time than many people expect. And see it as a process in depth. And thank you for legitimizing that for me.
And that's the whole point of activism. You do what you can where you are. And with the tools you have and with the effectiveness that assures some kind of positive result, it's not about whether it causes things to happen overnight. That's not necessarily where we have to have long-distance runners. We have to have sprinters. See? But all working toward the same thing, which is effecting beneficial change. So thanks so much for your contribution today. Let's go to Chicago. Henry, how's things?
Hey, Yatrice, how's it going?
Good. And you?
All right. I'm doing good, doing good. You had a lot of East Coast callers, so I have to represent the Midwest here.
Yeah, you feel obligated to stand in and stand up for the Midwest. So
yeah.
What are you going to contribute today? What are your thoughts about where you are in this process and how we got here?
Well, obviously, my stance is I'm still going to vote, but I'm not voting for either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton or any third party. I'm going to write my own name in for the president.
Okay.
As a sign of discontent with the election process and with the candidates that we have been presented, I kind of find it interesting with people when I talk about politics, because I kind of see that, and this is just from my perspective, that the older people who I talk to are more conservative or in line to whatever political party that, you know, that they're aligned with. And then the younger people are the ones who kind of think, you know, more in the lines of us, which is kind of encouraging, you know. But, you know, what I wondered was why the older people are, you know, in line with the Democrats or Republicans, and the one weapon that this particular system uses is basically, you know, fear. And, you know, you ask people who, you know, what is the reason why they vote for the Democratic Party? Most of the time, it's because they don't want Donald Trump to be president. And you ask, you know, the Republican people who report the Republican Party, and most of the time they say terrorism or immigration or, you know, whatever they can think of that would ruin the values of, you know, white America. But, you know, it's like discouragement and fear is the primary weapon of the system. People don't want to stand out on their own because of the fact that they feel they don't have a chance. And, you know, I try to tell people, you look at the history of revolutions and movements, you know, battles weren't won in the first war, you know. And most of the time, the people who started the revolution lost the first war. I mean, where would the Haitian Revolution be if Bookman had got killed and Toussaint was shipped into, you know, to France and was killed subsequently? But, it's like, you know, did the Haitians give up after that? No, they kept going. And you look at the history of any other revolutions and movements, you know, it would have been a lost cause if their leaders would have if they would have died or, you know, been in jail or whatever. You know, we have to be persistent in this, you know. Just because you lose one battle or even the first battle does not mean that you stop. And I think too many people are just too afraid to step out on their own. And I think one of the callers, you know, was saying, and I get the same question about, you know, who am I voting for? And I say I vote for neither one of them. And they say, oh, you're voting for Donald Trump. No, I'm not voting for Donald Trump, you know, because people are afraid that if you don't vote for Hillary, then Donald Trump is going to be president. What is going to change if Donald Trump becomes president? I just don't see anything really changing that much.
So what for you has been the leading lesson of this political season? What has been the most important thing that you have learned or are learning?
Well, you know, as I was saying, it's the fear that I didn't know the fear was that prevalent among the people. And I talk to people who are, you know, who I think is very politically, you know, informed and knowledge and, you know, who support the Democratic Party and basically tell me that, you know, we just don't, you know, we're voting for Hillary because we just don't want Donald Trump. And these people who I talk to know about some of the stuff that Hillary has done with her husband's Clinton Foundation and some of the stuff that she rattled when she was running against Obama in 2008, but they still are supporting her, you know? And I'm like, this just doesn't make any sense. But I just, you know, what made me discover is how prevalent it is amongst the community. You're still supporting a person who is not even fit to be, you know, an alderman. So
not fit to be a dog catcher, really. She's not fit to be a dog catcher.
Yeah, you're right about that, too.
It would be an insult to dogs to have Hillary Clinton appointed as the lead dog catcher. Not a good person for the job. Let me ask you this. Why is this surprising to you that there is this fear and it's so prevalent and it seems to have put people in the box of just force of habit, and they continue to do things and they continue to maintain positions that are even antithetical, directly antithetical to their interests? Why is that surprising to you?
Well, I guess it's because the more older people I talk to, I find that more and more prevalent. But in my personal experience, there's a woman at my church who, you know, I consider very politically in tune to a lot of things. And actually, she's an elder of the church, and she used to work with the Black Panther Party. And when she had told me this in regards to why she's voting for Hillary, it really shocked me. You know, because I really, for years I always leaned on her for a lot of, you know, political information and also, you know, a lot of historical information as well in regards to politics and social issues. But, you know, it just kind of shocked me over the past couple of years on why she's supporting Hillary. But I guess that's just a personal thing for me. But I guess in the overall sense, I find it more, you know, the more I talk politics with people, the more I find this attitude of fear and just basically compromising with, you know, whatever they can get prevalent among, you know, among my circle.
Where does this fear come from, do you think?
Well, I think it's basically the powerlessness of, you know, of the African-American community. You know, you talk about it and other people talk about it that, you know, we're not politically protected. And that is the case. But at the same time, you know, we don't have to, you know, jump into a particular party to get protection. I mean, we could, if we rally around each other, you know, we can protect ourselves, you know.
Isn't it ironic that all of this power that we don't have, all of the power that we just absolutely do not have, we nonetheless power up people's entire political careers with the power that we supposedly don't have? Isn't that ironic?
Yeah, that's very ironic. Yes, it is.
We
yes,
have
is.
No power. Okay, so we have no power. Then how is it that we give birth to all these powerful people?
Well,
so somebody doesn't have an understanding of their power.
Yeah,
or that it even
true.
Exists. Something is wrong there. Something missing there. You don't have power. Okay. So why is Hillary Clinton so desperately in need of you and courting you? Why is it that the power, this powerless community and the powerless Latino community are the ones generating the political power for all of these people? How come?
That is true. That is true. And because of political ignorance. Political
Hello?
Ignorance. Hello?
We've got to do something to get people to understand the actual power that they do have and how to utilize that power in their own interest. Thanks so much, Henry, for calling in and contributing today. Well, that brings us to the end of our program. And we will continue talking because the awareness, political awareness, is key to political activism. And Clara is a good example. You got to be clear about what you can do and do well. It doesn't matter whether you're a long distance runner or you're a sprinter or like me, you know, a walker. Whatever your contribution you can make. And do well at that. That's perfect. If you could understand that that's what you want to do, and that's the contribution you could make, then do that. Or like Bruce, I'm going to go local, strictly local. You know, you start where you can. Or Eric saying, my job is to pass the word along about all these informational alternatives that are available to educate. So this is what we can do. And that's the answer to the question I pose all the time. We all can do something and do it well. It doesn't have to be huge and media inducing. It just has to be authentic and consistent. And with the idea that you will yield a positive result, a positive outcome from your efforts. And that's the great work of activism. Stay tuned. Coming up next. What's coming up next? Is it Infectious Myth with David Crowe, I believe? You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. That's leadstories@gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. We'll see each other tomorrow on my official, semi-official birthday. Until then, thanks so much for your input and your thoughts.